Rose Creek, which is another small creek flowing through Campbell, through an office park area. You would never know it when you're walking along the creek that it's a huge sprawling urban area above you. And in that area, we saw dozens of salmon spawning, like you would see them, in the Smith River or the Klamath River in Northern California. Beautiful habitat that's slated to get better through. There's a big restoration project happening on a I think it's a half mile or mile stretch of that creek that should provide more spawning habitat. So that's a good story. That's an acknowledgement that the fish are there. That's an attempt to give them what they need. But that effort needs to be repeated across the region, across the Bay Area, across the Pacific Northwest, if we want to have any hope of restoring these populations.
The piece is Against the Current in Sierra Magazine. Environmental writer Jeremy Miller, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio, Jeremy.
Thanks, Alex. Appreciate it.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise.
Additional music by the David Grisman Quintet, Corey Harris, Barnes & Barnes, and Bobby Charles.
Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.
Sequoia Ezekwe for Ear to the Streets of Portland on the best community radio station on the planet, KBOO Community Radio, KBOO Portland.
Tune in at 7 a.m. Monday through Friday for Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland at 90.7 FM.
Good morning, this is Disability Justice, an everyday pursuit in survival. Your host, John Griffiths.
In the studio audience with me today is Senator Sarah Gelser. Would you please introduce yourself, your pronouns and stuff like that, your name, pronouns?
Sure. My name is Sarah Gelser Bluen, and I use the pronouns she and her, and I am the state senator from Senate District 8, and it includes Corvallis, Albany, a little bit of South Salem, and some of the smaller towns and cities around that.
You're a part of the Committee on Human Services, right?
Correct. I chair that committee.
And what does that committee exactly do?
So our committee is responsible for looking at policies related to the Department of Human Services and everything that the Department of Human Services does. So that is developmental disabilities, aging and physical disabilities, self-sufficiency, which are things like food stamps and help with tangible needs, vocational rehabilitation, eligibility services, emergency management and response, kind of on that human side, refugee resettlement. So it's all of those things that the Department of Human Services touches.
Is it all senators, or does any representatives also sit on this committee?
So there's also a House Early Childhood and Human Services Committee. So that's a separate committee. The Senate has committees and the House has committees. And that's because anytime there is a bill, it has to go through both the Senate and the House so that lots of different people have an opportunity to think about it and look at it.
In the beginning of the 2025 legislative sessions, are there some things we can expect from it? Big bills you guys are kind of reviewing?
In this session, we'll be working on the budgets for the state, which is always very important. How much money do we spend on services for people with disabilities? How much money do we spend on roads? How much money do we spend on schools or universities or police and fire? The other thing that we do is look at how can we make government work better or meet needs that aren't met. So one example, one of the bills that I'm working on this session is for adults with disabilities that are employed. And these oftentimes are people with physical disabilities that they may have degrees as architects or social workers or attorneys, but they can't, or social workers, and they can't work for the pay that other people would earn because they need those personal support services to help them, you know, if they are paraplegic or quadriplegic, to get from their bed to their chair, their chair to their shower. And right now, if they work, they get insurance, but that insurance doesn't pay for personal care aides. So they just can't work, or else they wouldn't be able to get through the day without those personal supports. So the bill that we have would let a person that was making too much money to be eligible for Medicaid that provides those supports to basically pay a fee to have Medicaid stay with them so they could go to work. They can get their other insurance, but they can still have their personal care worker help them get ready to go to work so they can do their work. That would help more people with disabilities save money and earn money, because right now, people with significant disabilities don't have much of a choice but to live in poverty. Because even when they take advantage of expanded education opportunities and work opportunities, we limit how much they can earn and how much they can save.
When you say limits, that's generally coming from the federal level, not necessarily the state level.
You're right. These are federal rules, but states are allowed to ask for an exception. So Washington already does this. So it wouldn't change what the rule is from the federal level, but it would allow us to say to SSI, hey, we have special rules here, and this is how we're going to implement this. And then we can do that. They wouldn't get their SSI payments anymore. They would just be able to stay eligible for Medicaid.
What I hear from my peers is, you know, I didn't watch my work well enough and I wound up making too much money, and I wound up in trouble with SSI because I went over the SSI limit. Is there any way that the state of Oregon can help people out when it comes to that area?
Well, the idea behind this is the jobs that we're talking about are the jobs that would make people not need SSI. They would be making lots more money than SSI, and they would have private insurance. So right now, they are very limited in taking jobs that pay much more than the minimum wage if they're working full-time. And so this is, I mean, to me, this proposal is a win-win, because people with disabilities get to keep more money in their pockets. They get to earn more money. They also end up paying taxes, and their private insurance pays more of their medical. They don't need the SSI payment anymore. They don't need SNAP anymore. They don't need housing assistance because they're making enough money to buy a house and get their groceries and save for college for their children and save to repair their wheelchair when it's broken. So in this particular program, the goal that many of the advocates for this have is to not need to have any assistance at all from the government except for those personal care services.
Okay. I mean, I'm sorry. I guess I have a tendency to look at this from a much more, well, more poverty level, because more of the peers that I interact with are just really kind of like down there at the very bottom. They struggle with so many things, like having enough money to get in their wheelchairs fixed. I guess most of the people I interact with just wouldn't be able to get those higher paying jobs.
It would depend on the job that they got. So if you still did not make too much money to get that Social Security payment, you would still get that Social Security payment. So it doesn't change anything except for the people right now who they either have to turn down raises or promotions, because if they get them, they will lose their personal care services. That doesn't change anything for the folks that are not in that situation, except that this goes to both the income and the assets. So it would create a pathway for working adults with disabilities that have less income to be able to save more money for things like building their wheelchair. And that's one of the, or fixing their wheelchair. And that's also one of the reasons in Oregon, when we worked on the ABLE Act, that is focused specifically on people with developmental disabilities who have a disability that begins in childhood. But an adult whose disability began in childhood, they can also establish one of these savings accounts. And the money that goes into that doesn't count when Social Security looks at your assets. So that is allowing people to save money, you know, to be able to do a first and last month rent so they can move into their own place, or to take a vacation, or to fix their wheelchair.
The ABLE Act, yes. And aren't they also passing something in the House or the Senate, the Right to Repair Act?
Yes. So Senator Solomon brought two really good bills. One is the right to repair your wheelchair. So you can go and get the parts you need instead of having to pay a ridiculous amount of money to the manufacturer to repair your wheelchair. The second bill that went along with that had to do with the CCO and getting rid of some of the barriers that CCOs sometimes put in place when you need a wheelchair repair or other assistive devices.
What's a CCO?
CCO is a coordinated care organization. So that is, it's the group that organizes the healthcare benefits. They get to say yes or no when a person on the Medicaid wants to make a purchase. And they are kind of like the organizers of how you get care and what gets paid for.
There are a few other bills going through. I think it's SB 729, something to do with the counseling and therapy groups have said,
yes.
Like, well, you have an intellectual disability, so we're not able to deal with you. Whereas, you know, you would think, well, we don't really need a bill to, because, you know, it's supposed to be illegal to discriminate. And yet, here's a bill that actually deals with that issue. And I'm just kind of like, what? Anyway, I went babbling on, but can you tell me a little bit about SB 729?
Yes. So Senate Bill 729 is exactly what you said it is. It just says, again, like a reminder, that it's against the law to discriminate against people on the basis of their disability. And when a county program or a physician or a counselor or even the Oregon Health Authority says, we won't help you with your mental health needs because you have an intellectual disability and we don't serve those kinds of people, that is discrimination and it is against the law. And so this bill is just trying to remind people that that is true and really push Oregon Health Authority to do a better job of enforcing the law, providing training, building a workforce, and really helping people understand it doesn't take special training or some special person to provide healthcare to people with intellectual and developmental disabilities, and that people with intellectual and developmental disabilities do experience mental illness. Sometimes that is very, very significant in ways that are very obvious to people. And right now, people blame that on the developmental disability. Other times, it's very early, like someone is experiencing grief, or somebody is experiencing anxiety or depression that gets in the way of doing the things that they need to do. And people with intellectual and developmental disabilities, like everyone else, need to be able to get help when that happens so that they can get back on their feet and get back to living their lives.
Another bill I would be really interested in, and something I kind of want to know simply for my own, because this is a bill that was identified by a group that I have founded, which is Build A Movement. It's a group that I've founded with some other people. And basically, we've done it like now for 8 years. And we've come up, we've been hitting the same three topics each and every year. You know, we ask people, hey, what are you having a problem with? Well, there just seems to be the same three topics that are creeping up. It's housing, it's services, and well, I forgot the third one. Sorry, my memory is not perfect. But anyways, we come up with an idea of reducing caseloads for county case managers and PAs. And so we got together with some people with intellectual disabilities, and we kind of wrote up a legislative concept and sent it in and got it sponsored by Chris Gorsuch. And it's Senate Bill 725, I do believe.
Yes.
Which would drop the caseloads down to 30 to 1 per county case manager and PAs. And I was just kind of curious, any idea where it might be at this time?
Well, right now it is still sitting in the Senate Human Services Committee, and the hearing was really good. I mean, it was one of the best hearings that I've heard for a bill, and it was very persuasive. The challenge that we have is that making that change costs a lot of money. And right now we don't have a lot of money. And there is the risk of the federal government and Medicaid, and whether our Medicaid funding will change because of Donald Trump. So we're trying to figure that out. And I am trying to figure out how, even if we don't get to the numbers that are there, I'm trying to figure out how, is there a way that we can make some progress on that in a limited budget and keep that process moving forward? I think everyone in my committee would vote on the bill. I don't worry about that. But when it leaves my committee, it has to go to the budget committee, where they have to find the money to fund it. So I'm just trying to figure out how, if we say yes in the committee, that it actually has a chance when it gets down to the budget committee. I don't think it's fair to all of you to make you all work through the spring, all the advocates of the bill, if I know it's not likely to have the money to do it. So I want to be very honest with people about what those opportunities are. And I want to see if there's a way that we can get to some of it.
Well, you know, I'm fully willing to testify before Ways and Means about how valuable or how necessary it is. And
I know you are. The problem is that they don't have public hearings in Ways and Means very often. And everything happens at the end once everything is in place, and they only move forward some policy bills. Right now, it's not clear if we will have any money to do any new or different things. So that's what I'm trying to understand. And I want to make sure that if we do send it to Ways and Means, I want it to cost enough money that it actually gets considered and doesn't have a price that's so big that it just gets put on the pile of, these are really nice things we'd like to do, but we just don't have the money right now. So that, and if we find out we're not going to have any money to do things, that's where I'm saying I don't think it's fair to string people along to just say that we've done this if I know when we do that, that it's not going to go anywhere. So I guess that's a long way of saying I'm trying to figure out how do we actually get something done from that, because it's really important. And the testimony was very, very good. The caseloads are way too high, and that's not good for the staff, and that's not good for the clients. So I want to fix that, and I think many people in the legislature do. And so there's just some behind the scenes work around trying to figure out how the money parts work.
You know, I must admit, you gave me one hell of an education. I just assumed that, like, you take the bill, you get a or you get somebody to sponsor it, and then you write up a little blurb and you send it in, you get it legalized, okay, and then you send it through. I didn't really kind of understand that there's a lot of strategy that actually goes on behind the doors to get like this moved through this committee, and still, like, you know, if it's got to go through another committee, well, how do we like present it so that it gets through that committee? I mean,
I think one way to think about it is that it costs money. So let's say you go to the grocery store for the week and you need to get your prescription and you need milk. And, you know, there's all of the, you need all of the things, but the prices have gone up and you only have so much money in your bank. You have to figure out which of these things that I really need am I buying so that I can pay for it. And that's the same thing that the legislature has. We spend these months listening to all the things that we really should be doing. And at the end, we have to look at what do we have in the bank account, because if we don't have the money in the bank account, we can't pay it. So we have to look at all of those good ideas and figure out, okay, how can we get this money to the most things that make the biggest difference to people? And what we're stuck by, the one thing we can't control, is how much money is in the bank.
But I'm still hoping my bill will get through somehow.
I hope so too. Such a good hearing. And it was a high point for me so far this session. The advocates did such a great job. Just a really, really good job.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so very much. Thank you so very much. I've been alive for a very long time, and I've gone through many presidents. I mean, I was around when Jimmy Carter was in the White House. So, you know, I've gone through quite a few presidents. And I'm going to admit that this is the only president that I've actually had a fear for my life. I'm really afraid that, as Dana Hittle has said it, that orange thing is going to sign some executive order that will start the states in a very downfall towards prejudice and bigotry, and, you know, the potentiality of starting up camps and stuff like that. Yeah. And people with disabilities are going to be on the hit list. And so I'm just kind of like wondering, you know, I've heard of other minority groups trying to get their rights or survival insured within the Oregon State Constitution. And it's just kind of like wondering, is anybody doing that for people with disabilities?
Excellent question. So there is a ballot measure this fall that will try to remove from the Oregon Constitution language that says marriage is between one man and one woman. I spent time, and I really was grateful to the people that are working on that ballot measure who actually really explored it. I asked if we could add disability to that. It wasn't possible because the rules about what you can put out in terms of a constitutional ballot measure, it has to be about one subject. And what this all pulled together was around kind of the topic of non-discrimination based on sex. And I know that there is significant concern. I get very worried that people forget that and forget how vulnerable the disability community is. And I think it's really hard for people to talk about ableism, because oftentimes ableism comes with good intentions that are very kind of protective. Sometimes it comes with very bad intentions, but we miss those things or how they're damaging to communities. And I think a good example of that is when that plane crashed last month and President Trump said the FAA is hiring people with severe disabilities. Well, the pilots and the air traffic controllers were not people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. There are people with disabilities who are in the workforce because they are qualified for the jobs that they are doing, and they are good at doing those jobs because people with disabilities have capacity. That was kind of lost, I think, on the broader public, what a substantial attack that was on people with intellectual and developmental disabilities and also people with mental illness. I am very worried. Medicaid, the risk to Medicaid is very significant in terms of the ability for people to get through the day, to live in the community. That very much scares me. It very much scares me that when President Trump talks about deportations and people coming into the country, he talks about people coming out of institutions. That is the disability community. So I think it's incredibly important that we talk about that consistently, ongoing, and really continue to raise that. Here in Oregon, I hope that we are committed. I have been worried. I have seen some slippage in our understanding of what it means to have made a commitment to deinstitutionalization. And I see that starting with our children. There's going to be a bill next week brought by the department that will take away protections around restraint and seclusion for children with developmental disabilities, that will allow them to start sending children with developmental disabilities to institutions out of state, like they did in 2019 that we stopped. And there would be no protections around that. All of the protections specific to people with developmental disabilities are excluded from that. It would allow children with developmental disabilities to be placed in adult group homes and adult foster homes. That doesn't make sense. Adults with developmental disabilities are adults. Children with developmental disabilities are children. That scares me because that is coming from the Oregon Department of Human Services and Dana Hiddle, Director Hiddle, I like her a lot, but she voted yes. She is supporting that proposal. That scares me a lot because that is a path towards institutionalization, like freezing new residential providers. If you can only choose where you live from a list that somebody else has picked, you're not choosing anymore. I think we need to change the SACU. I've thought that for a long time, but I also don't think that you just do that in a budget and don't talk to the people that live in those houses. Like, the conversation has to start with the people whose homes those are, and to have those conversations and not focus that directly on people with intellectual and developmental disabilities terrifies me, because it shows me that the department does not understand the basic tenets of self-determination and deinstitutionalization, and that it's not an institution is not just a place. It's people making your life decisions for you. So we have to talk about this even to the people that we like a lot. And again, I like Director Hiddle a lot. I think a concern that I have is that we are backing away from our commitment to not institutionalizing people with developmental disabilities, and it's starting with children. We can see that in a House bill that is being put forward by the Department of Human Services and the System of Care Advisory Council that would allow children with developmental disabilities to be sent to out-of-state institutions, to be put in adult foster homes and adult group homes, and that peels back protection from restraint and seclusion. And it is alarming to me that the disability community has not been involved in this conversation, and that the director of the Department of Developmental Disabilities, Director Hiddle, who I really like, voted for and is supporting this plan. We cannot start institutionalizing children with developmental disabilities, because once we start that, once people go in, they don't come back out. We should not be going backwards on this.
No, we shouldn't. Institutions never again.
I hope that you and others will write lots of letters to the House committee that is considering this bill, and I can send some information to help with that. But we really need the disability community to be very active, speaking for themselves, even if they disagree with me about these issues, because they're very significant for people with disabilities.
You know, I would like to thank you very much for coming on to my show, and I hope to have you again sometime soon. So if you could give us contact information, we really greatly appreciate that. Go for it.
Email is the best. It's sen.sarahgelser@oregonlegislature.gov.
That's the end of Disability Justice. DisabilityJustice@KBOO.org.
David Brower, David R. Brower, and I add the R because there are 100 other David Browers in the United States, and that keeps me separate from most of them. I like the direction you're going in, KBOO, Portland, and I wish you had a lot more company.